Hi, guys, and welcome to a special edition of the Money Podcast called Money News You'll Really Use. The concept is simple. I subscribe to tons of financial publications, and every month I read hundreds of articles. Then once every couple of weeks, I give you the highlights to bring you up to speed on the important news that affects your money. Think of it as an investor's almanac. In part one of today's show, we're going to discuss where we are now and what's happened in the markets this month. In part two, we'll go over important news stories. In part three, we'll go over recent investments the three of us have made. And then if time allows, we'll go over some listener questions. I'm your host, Stacey Johnson. My co-host, as usual, is Miranda Marquette. Hello, Miranda.
Hello, Stacey and Aaron.
Yes, listening in and sometimes contributing is producer and novice investor Aaron Freeman. Say hi, Aaron.
Hello. How are you guys doing today?
All right, then. Let's get this ball rolling. But first, a quick disclaimer. We're going to discuss specific investments in this show, including things we've personally invested in. But these aren't recommendations. Why? Because what's right for us may not be right for you. So before you invest in anything, you need to do your own research. You need to make your own decisions. Okay, let's get back to the news. We're going to start with where we are now and where we've been this month. Okay, now, since mid-June, now the last time we did this was 2 weeks ago, mid-June. Since that time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up about 0.3%. So not very much.
Skyrocketing.
Yeah, not much happening there. But since the beginning of the year, though, the Dow is up about 14%. Because this is mid-year, so we should be looking at how we've done so far this year. So up about 14% so far this year. Next, the tech-heavy NASDAQ, up about 3% over the last 2 weeks. Up about 10% so far this year. Now, the Russell 2000 is the index for smaller companies, also known as small caps. That index is up 0.2% over the last 2 weeks, so basically unchanged. But since the beginning of the year, it's up about 18%. So little stocks up 18%, big stocks, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 14%, and tech-heavy stocks, NASDAQ, up about 10% so far this year. So you can see the difference between these different types of stocks. Okay, and finally, the 10-year Treasury bond, that's how we keep an eye on interest rates. Today, it is paying just under 1.5%, virtually identical to where it was a couple of weeks ago, but about 50% higher than it was at the beginning of the year. So that's where we are. Isn't it interesting to see in perspective? When you stare at this stuff every day, it's interesting to go back and see what's actually happened. Like, you know, like some things are just really unchanged in the last 2 weeks, but it feels like lots of stuff is happening. Things are going up and down, but they're ending up pretty much in the same place over a 2 week period, at least.
I don't know. It's really sad. I'm still just kind of seeing, waiting, right? I don't know. Just waiting for the other shoe to drop, I guess. So
there are a lot of articles out there.
You've been doing a lot of research, huh, Aaron? Aaron's becoming quite, he was barely investing at all. Well, I shouldn't say it that way, but you've become a lot more intense investor since we started doing this podcast.
It's just interesting because so many articles, there's so many institutional guys out there going, oh, it's going to end. It's market's going to go up 30-40% at the end of the year, and then it's going to crash 20% in bulls. And then there's tons of articles about, you know, Powell's going to have to increase the interest rates, and that's what's going to cause it all. So I'm almost wondering, is that what's keeping everybody in this holding pattern?
Yeah, well, you know, it's just interesting because here's the way I'm looking at it. You know, the market is a discounting mechanism. So in other words, the stock market is going to try to tell you where the market, where the economy is going to be 6 months from now, 6 months to a year. So it's looking at the future. So remember that when we first started doing this podcast, when we talk about the stock market, maybe a year ago, I don't know how long ago it's been, but anyway, we would say the market is poised to come out of this pandemic and everyone's going to spend a bunch of money and things are going to go up. Well, the market started acting that way almost immediately. You know, the market hit a low when the pandemic hit a high, basically. And ever since then, it's remained high. But the market's now looking out and it's going, if everybody's bought all their boats, cars, vacations, et cetera, a year from now, then the comparisons to this time period are not going to be good. You know, people are going to be selling fewer cars, boats, vacations. And so that's going to make the market compress. So the top of the market is going to come before the top of the economy. And I'm trying to figure out where that's going to be so I can bail. Not out of everything. We never bail out of everything. But I've been waiting to get out of oil stocks, for example. And oil was horrible. It's one of the best performing sectors this year, up 40%. But and I've owned oil stocks for 10 years. And I'm ready to go to alternate energy investment. So I want to get out of my oil. I want to get out of my banks. But I'm not sure exactly where the top of the market's going to be for these things. So that's what I'm waiting to find out. And I'm not sure where that's going to be. And I sure don't want to get caught.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how would you know?
Well, you really don't.
It's just you kind of got to make that decision yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I'm not going to try to pick up every last nickel profit. You know, I mean, I've made a lot of money on these stocks because I've owned them for a really long time.
Are you waiting to see how the big institutional guys move their money? Is that what you're waiting for?
Well, but there's no way to know that because they don't all move in concert. You know, so, I mean, you could look at the Wall Street Journal, look at any financial periodical any day, and you'll see one money manager who's famous and rich saying the market's just about to crash. Well, another one's saying, like, you got to go all in, baby. It's things not just starting to take off. I mean, you know, you can't get really straight answers by just looking at what
you're saying about getting out of banks and stuff like that. I picked up this little weird tiny company called SoFi, which is an online or whatever. It's an app-based banking system. But you look at Acorns, they've got like 9 million users. I mean, how many users does it take before you say, you know, this is the thing?
Well, no, I mean, no question. That's great. And that's by the way, Aaron, is exactly why I want to get out of bank stocks. I've got traditional bank stocks that I bought in 2009. I've got JP Morgan, I've got Citibank, I've got Wells Fargo. And so what I want to do is I want to get out of those and I want to get in to stocks like SoFi. I want to get into the new financial stocks in order to invest for the future, which we've talked about before. I'm just not sure where my maximum profit's going to be on my bank stocks that I have now, my traditional banks. And, you know, this is why we're having this podcast. As we go along, then I'll just tell you when I'm going to get out.
And you did just mention maybe there's a pullback on consumer spending. Like maybe they already have all their cars. Maybe they already have all their RVs. And maybe they now have their houses and they're all happy. To counter that, there's a stat out there that said there is about $2.4 trillion saved during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
By just regular accounts, everyday people. And that's a lot of spending power.
Yes, it is.
That's yet to come out of there. You know, we don't know how they're going to spend it yet.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this could go on for a very long time. That's why I don't want to get out too early, you know, of these sorts of stocks, the oil stocks. Oil could go to $100. As a matter of fact, I think that's one of the, it is. It's one of the stories I'm going to tell you about in a little while. So I don't want to get out too early. And also, if the pandemic starts rearing its ugly head again, then that could slow things down. And so then the recovery would take longer, you know. That's another story I'm going to cover, I think, today. Not so much here, but there are pockets in the United States where the pandemic is starting to resurge. But it's also happening internationally. So anyway, as a matter of fact, if you have no more general comments on the market, I'll go right into the news.
Go for it.
Okay, now I'm going to give you guys 5 news stories. And for those of you listening, if you go to our show notes, you're going to find probably 15 or 20. So I just picked 5 that I think are important. I'm going to read them out to Miranda and Aaron, and then they're going to tell me which one they think is the single most important one. Okay, June 15th. This came from CNBC. Here's your headline. Rents for single-family homes just saw the largest gains in nearly 15 years. Text. Even as the pandemic ebbs and Americans get back to work and play, they still want more space at home. But with home prices hitting record highs, demand for single-family rental homes is soaring, and so are rents. Single-family rents were up 5.3% year-over-year in April, up from a 2.4% increase in April from April 2020, according to CoreLogic. That's the largest gain in nearly 15 years. Rents for single-family detached homes were up an even stronger 7.9% compared with a year ago. So rents are going up. Here's my next story. This is from June 16th. Associated Press. World Bank sees 5.6% global growth in 2021, the best since 1973. That's your headline. Here's some text. But the 2021 rebound will be uneven, the bank predicts, led by rich countries such as the United States that could afford to spend vast amounts of taxpayer money to support their economies. 90% of advanced economies are expected to return to pre-pandemic levels next year, measured by income per person, versus just a third of developing countries. 90% of developed countries back to pre-pandemic normal versus just a third of developing countries. It's kind of sad.
Wow.
Yeah. Now we're going to skip ahead to June 21st. Headline. This comes from Barron's. Headline. Oil could get to $100 a barrel. Here are the stocks to play it. Here's some quotes. Oil prices could spike above $100 a barrel next year if demand keeps improving, Bank of America analyst Francisco Blanch wrote in a report on Monday. COVID-19 caused fuel prices to plunge and forced producers to slow drilling. What happened next has been surprising, though. Instead of resuming their old ways when fuel demand picked up again, most producers held back to conserve cash, keep their balance sheets lean. So that means fuel supplies or fuel demand is jumping, but supply still hasn't caught up. And just so you know what they are, the stocks that he recommended were ExxonMobil, Occidental Petroleum, Hess, Diamondback Energy, and Devon Energy. Okay, here's your next story. June 24th, this comes from CNBC. We have a deal, Biden says, after meeting with Senate Infrastructure Group, rather, Infrastructure Group, that's your headline. And here's a quick quote. President Joe Biden on Thursday declared that the White House had struck an infrastructure deal with a bipartisan group of senators after discussing the massive plan to improve the nation's roads, bridges, and broadband earlier in the day. The lawmakers have worked for weeks to craft a roughly $1 trillion infrastructure package that could get through Congress with support from both parties. Deciding how to pay for the plan has posed the biggest challenge, and the senators have not finalized how their proposal would raise revenue. And we've got one more headline for you. This is from June 28th, which is yesterday, from the New York Times. This is my favorite, I'll tell you that. Here's your headline. mRNA vaccines may offer lasting protection, study finds. The vaccine, here's a quote. The vaccines made by Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna set off a persistent immune reaction in the body that may protect against a coronavirus for years, scientists reported on Monday. Isn't that cool? The findings add to growing evidence that most people immunized with mRNA vaccines may not need boosters, so long as the virus and its variants do not evolve much beyond their current forms.
There's also an article out there that says if you have at least one shot of each, it's good to protect you too.
Oh, listen to the last sentence in this article too, or at least the last sentence I cut and pasted. People who recovered from COVID-19 before being vaccinated may not need boosters, even if the virus does make a significant transformation. So I had COVID, and I've had the Pfizer vaccine. So I may never have to get another shot.
Same here.
Nice.
You didn't get COVID, right,
Marina? I did not have the COVID. I did not have the COVID, but I did get the vaccine. So
I will say this, though. There were reports of hair loss after having COVID, and I had a lot of hair loss.
You had a lot of hair loss?
Yeah, and it started to grow back.
If you guys could see Aaron, you would be laughing right now, listeners, because Aaron has hippie hair. He's got hair past his shoulders.
But it was as I was shampooing, it would just come out and in my hands. It was crazy.
You realize who you're talking to, though. You're talking to thinning hair Stacy. You can see my scalp. I want your hair to fall out. I'm jealous of your hair. I don't like your hair.
Luckily, everything is okay.
Thank God. Please keep me informed. Okay, so I'm going to recap your headlines real quick, guys, and you can give me your pick. Okay, we had rents going up. We had World Bank sees 5.6% growth, best since 1973. We had oil could get to $100 a barrel. Here are five ways to play it. And we had Biden approves Senate infrastructure plan. And finally, vaccines offer lasting protection. What do you guys think is the most important one?
Ooh, well, I think the single family rent thing is really interesting from the standpoint of how difficult a lot of things are. Like right now in the various housing markets, I mean, you know, now single family home rents are starting to catch up because people can't afford houses, so they're staying renting. And so now the rents are starting to catch up. And in fact, I'm in the middle of waiting for my landlord to, like, he says he'll renew the lease for another year, which I'm like, yay, you're not selling. Thank goodness. Because I live in one of the hottest real estate markets in the country right now. But at the same time, he's also researching to see if he's going to, like, up my rent. So
of course he's going to.
It's exciting. It's exciting. We're going to see what
happens.
When's
he going to tell you?
He should let me know in the next couple of weeks. So it's going to be fun.
Well, you should tell people where you live just so they know what you mean when you say one of the hottest real estate markets. And it's definitely true because I've read it.
Yeah, so I live in Idaho. So cool, right?
It's weird that not Idaho's a beautiful place. Don't get me wrong, but it's weird that that's one of the hottest markets in the United States.
Here we are.
You don't get nailed on higher rent.
Me too.
I think greedy landlords are jerks.
You're a greedy landlord, aren't you?
No. You got to find that right balance. Because if you got a good tenant, you got to keep them in there.
But you know, when I was landlord, Aaron, I thought it was way more important to me to have a good tenant than it was to get the last dollar of rent. Because I had tenants, you know, that were crackheads. I mean, I'd rather have a tenant that can take care of their own selves and fix the house if it breaks than to get every dollar that's possible to get out of the rental.
As far as I think that World Bank with the 5.6 global growth, I think that's pretty interesting. Because I think we're really in the great turtle slow recovery.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the great reopening. I think it's a ridiculously slow thing. And
I've noticed if you started investing that you seem to be a little impatient, that you're looking for instant responses. But this is going to go on for another year at least, like a herd of turtles, I think.
I don't know. I'm not getting impatient with my investing.
Okay.
Not at all.
Well, speaking of
which... I've been trying to shift more towards the Miranda style, but because I've noticed there's not a whole lot of movement, and I don't know if any of these other yahoos about the 20%, you know, dip are correct or not, I've been trying to find those companies that are awesome and they have good deals.
I can't wait to find out what Miranda style is. But unfortunately, though, I'm going to take a really quick break. But the instant that we get back, I'm going to find out what Miranda style investing is, and I'm going to do it too. We'll be right back. Okay, so here we are again. Aaron is using Miranda style investing. Please tell us what that is.
Well, he's kind of not, but because my main style of investing, of course, is the good old indexing.
That's what he meant by. Is that what you meant, Aaron, by Miranda style investing?
Yeah. I want to try to get over into that eventually.
Oh, okay.
I'm waiting until after this so-called correction to start doing it.
I thought you meant Dogecoin investing, because that's what I think of when I think of Miranda style investing.
Oh, yeah, totally. 100%.
Okay. And by the way, let's transition right into our next segment, which is what the hell we've been doing with our money over the last couple of weeks since we last talked. And you actually have bought, you just told me, you bought some more Dogecoin.
I did. For funsies, I took a couple hundred bucks and bought, because Doge dipped so low. And do I really think that it's going to be a long-term thing? I don't know. It depends. How long is Elon Musk going to tweet about it? And will he actually do anything about it? Who knows? You know, because the rumor, of course, is he's getting involved with Dogecoin, helping them update their protocols and all the things. And so, but just for funsies, I bought a couple hundred bucks worth of Dogecoin when it dipped below 20 cents a coin. I bought some of that, and just for funsies, and there we are.
How long did you let it run?
I don't know. We'll see. If Doge hits 35 cents again, I'll probably definitely sell. I also, for fun, Aaron suggested, he was doing some of his research, and he suggested a stock that he thought looked interesting, and I thought, for funsies, I would just use his labor. And so CHPT, so that's a charge point, right? The payment processing. So I thought that would be kind of fun. So I went ahead and... I put about $1,000 into ChargePoint, and it's great. It's been doing well since we did it. So nice pick, Aaron. And
what'd you pay for it, Aaron or Miranda?
Oh yeah, I'm up 28% on that.
Are you really?
Yeah, it was a good find.
Yeah. So my
what'd you pay for it?
My average cost per share was higher because I got in there after Aaron did, but my average cost per share ended up being about $30 a share, and my total return so far is 8%. So not terrible.
Yeah, and I think you'll keep climbing.
It's 35 right now.
Well, they're both a paywall for charging your car and the actual installers of the charge stations.
Yeah.
Now, I read something, Aaron, when we were discussing this over text, and I wasn't responding because I hate talking on text. I looked it up, and I read an article saying that there was too much competition, that it wasn't a good buy.
There is a lot of competition out there. Yeah.
That's why I didn't buy it.
It's going to be a matter of whether or not who wins out. And there's another competitor, Blink. And Blink is, I think they're like a European company, maybe. And they're building here in America, too. And then you also have companies like themselves, like Ford. Like, so ChargePoint actually offers fleet management for their charging systems. And then recently Ford built their own fleet software, or they bought a company to do that. So yeah, there's a lot of competition. It's hard to see who's going to win out, but kind of like Bitcoin, you kind of go with the person that's there the first and the biggest. So I went with them.
Cool. Well, here's I've done one thing since we had our last conversation 2 weeks ago about this stuff. I kept telling you guys I was going to sell my Barrick gold because it was at a loss, so I could generate a loss to help offset some profits later. And I did do that. I sold Barrick gold and I bought Newmont Mining. So what I did was I sold something that I had at a loss, but I bought something very similar. Newmont Mining also, they have more copper than Barrick gold does. Barrick gold is primarily gold, although any gold miner does also mine copper. But anyway, so I sold Barrick, bought Newmont the same day. So if gold had gone up, then I would have been okay because I was still in another company just like it. But at the same time, I generated a loss for tax purposes because, as I just said earlier in this podcast, I plan on taking some major profits toward the end of the year. So whenever I see a loss in my portfolio now, I try to do a sale on that so I can sell it at a loss, get a tax deduction that'll help offset my gains later in the year. So that's one thing I did do. Other than that, though, I don't think I did anything in the last 2 weeks. In fact, I've only done 5 trades this year.
Wow.
Yeah, well, most of the stuff I own 35 different companies, maybe including mutual funds, maybe. But I've owned most of them since year 2009. I mean, I own stuff for long periods of time. And really, I started buying stuff this year primarily because of this podcast, to be honest with you, because I felt like I needed to do something. And also, I thought that I thought this market was relatively predictable in the sense that I thought it was going to go up because we were coming out of a really bad time. So I did want to put some more money into the market anyway. But I've got a lot of money in the market, more than half of my savings. So I'm not buying a whole bunch. But here's what I bought so far this year. Emerging markets ETF, which I'm up about 3% on. I bought that in March, so not doing real well, but not doing horrible. The small cap value fund, I'm up about 8% on. That's Vanguard small cap value. I just the other day, not real long ago, well, June 1st, I bought a Europe small cap ETF. I'm down on that. I think I bought that a little early. I still feel pretty good about it, though. I think European stocks are going to do well, and I think small caps can do even better than big caps. Oh, there's more risk. The Global Infrastructure Fund. I bought back in March, and I'm up about 12% on that. Yeah, I think that's all.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I've never been a big ETF buyer. In fact, I don't know that. I owned an oil ETF, but I don't, because you've persuaded me in that direction, Miranda. Usually, I buy individual stocks, but I've been buying these ETFs this year.
I really have enjoyed the ETFs just because they're easier to buy and sell. So they just seem to make a lot of sense for me.
Well, you know, I'll tell you though, and maybe this is just me, but I don't see how you make a lot of money when you buy these broad-based funds, you know? I mean, and I'm certainly not discouraging anyone from doing that. I mean, obviously, it's better to buy a diversified portfolio of stocks than it is to buy one. But, I mean, look at the stuff you guys were just talking about. You know, you bought a stock, it goes up 15%, you know, in a month. Well, these ETFs don't do that.
Yeah, they don't do that.
Yeah, no. And for me, it's not about like making money fast. It's about longevity and doing it over time, which is, you know, why, you know, I've been able to build this portfolio over the last, you know, 15 years or so, and it's done really well for me. And now I just feel a little bit more comfortable branching out and trying some things with extra money. But for me, it's just about building that long-term portfolio, that long-term basis, and making it fairly simple without having to think about it, and just kind of going from there, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And that's exactly the kind of advice we're supposed to be giving people.
For me, it's about what are the young millennials and Gen Z going to do? Because they're going to be the new money. And I think they're going to invest in different ways than the us old guys.
You know, I'll tell you something, Aaron. I either heard or, because I listen to a lot of podcasts too, I either heard or read this exact thing recently about it, investing is different. And you know what that tells me? people aren't paying attention. They're stupid because there is no different. You know, I remember it was somebody was saying something like, oh, yeah, we used to buy stocks on fundamentals, but now we're buying them on momentum.
Well, I'm not so much buying on momentum. I'm buying on ideals. So, like, I bought Beyond Meat, and I'm up 32% on it. And that's because I've been a meat eater all my life, and I'm, you know, like, it's not good for you at this age. You know, heart disease and whole nine yards. And I've been trying a lot of them, and I like them. They're really good. But also, I've noticed and read a lot of articles that that's actually the way that the youth are eating.
Well, no,
too.
That's the way. Oh, you're talking about the youth. It's eating that way or investing that way?
No, eating that way.
Oh, okay. So well, he's
well, you just go ahead.
So Miranda. So it's literally putting your money where your mouth is. So
oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So if you have this whole generation or a couple generations that are going to get more into plant-based food, that's a win. And the same goes for like these Robin Hoods and Acorns and SoFi's and stuff like that. I looked at the SoFi website, and it's a brand new concept for, not concept, I mean, it's a brand new bank. It's on top of all the other banks, and it's got a lot of competition, but it was heavily geared towards young millennials and Gen Z.
But Aaron, you're describing the way people have always invested. This isn't a new way to invest. That's why you're supposed to invest. That's why everybody invests. By looking toward the future and seeing what companies are doing well or could potentially do well. That's what you always should have been doing. That's what Warren Buffett does. He's almost 100.
Yeah. So good. I'm on point.
You're on point.
Hurrah. Yay, everybody.
Yeah. I did buy a penny stock, though.
Ooh,
you did?
Which one?
What?
Just out of craziness. And of course, it's probably something that's not going to happen at all. But so I was looking into photosynthesis hydrogen.
Okay.
I know everybody's
like,
what?
Nice, nice. I like it. I like it.
So it's basically you're making using the sun to make hydrogen. And there are a lot of super smart people out there trying to use algae to break apart the atoms there and produce hydrogen. And you can use salt water, you can use wastewater, you can use fresh water, whatever. But doing it with algae is just really complicated, and it's kind of a tedious process. And so there's a little company called, what is it, Sun Hydrogen. Mm-hmm. Figured out a way to do it with nanoparticles, and they've already have proof of concept, like 100 units out there proving that they can do it. And German companies checking them out, and they're like 8 cents a share.
What's the symbol of this company? Do you know?
HYSR.
HYSR. I'm looking it up right now. It's at 8.5 cents, about 8.4 cents.
Right. So it's pretty complicated to make hydrogen.
Where
so
did you get this from?
So they kind of come up with a way to produce hydrogen right on the spot. So the sun makes it, and they get to store it, and there's you don't have to extract it from any kind of petroleum. If they can get it so that it's cost effective, you know, they might win.
Yeah, it's cool. And the stock's been as high as 34 cents, which is what, four times its current price.
Right. And you know, it's a future energy. You know, I think we're all going to have all types of energy. We're going to use wind. We're going to use solar. We're going to use hydrogen. We're going to use nuclear. You know, we're going to get away from the fossil fuels. So I figured, yeah, this will be my hydrogen.
But where did you find that?
Just digging around for different energies.
And that is cool. However, for those of you listening at home, my advice is not to buy penny stocks. I also own a penny stock that I got on a tip, which is completely the wrong way to invest. But I did it anyway, just for fun. But
no, by mine, I only spent $99 on this.
Okay.
I'm not putting thousands of dollars in this stuff.
You know, by the way, you guys, I have to tell you something. One of the reasons I don't gamble as much as you guys do, and it's not that I'm by the way, for those of you listening, I'm not super rich, but I'm relatively well off as an investor compared to my two contemporaries here. So in other words, my point is this, I would never put $100 into something ever. Because it wouldn't make any difference if I was right. And then I'd be mad at myself if I was right. You know, let's say I put $100 into something and it goes up to $500. I'd be like, so? So generally, if I do anything at all, I'm going to put a few $1,000s into it. And that makes me less reluctant to gamble. You see what I'm saying? Because if I can't put enough into it to move the needle, there's no point in doing it. And if it's enough to move the needle, I don't want to lose it. So I end up not doing a whole bunch of stuff like Dogecoin or that, you know, what you just said, Aaron.
Yeah, well, I think too, though, part of it is just, you know, that calculated risk portion of it, but also just, you know, it's like for me, yeah, I threw a couple. I mean, my first original Dogecoin experiment was a couple $1,000s and that went well. And just for funsies, I put in a couple hundred, but I do have a penny stock as well that I bought a while ago. So it's not anything new that I've done recently. It's a pot stock. And I just need it to be decriminalized, everybody. Decriminalize pot for my, so that my pot stock and also my, and then I also have a different pot ETF that's actually doing well today. Anyway, but I think for a lot of people, you know, being able to put in $200 to $500 and see some of those gains is useful.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah. And then also, I think part of the reason why I like dollar cost averaging into indexing is because it's a strategy for building your portfolio over time. And it's something that you can do even if you only have like $50 to start with, you know, and that's how I started. When I bought shares at my first index fund, it was $50 a month. And that's how I started, was with $50 a month. And then, of course, over time, I increased what I was investing each month. But it's something that you can do. So even though it seems small, indexing with dollar cost averaging is a really great way to start building your portfolio over time and start building that foundation.
Yeah, that's, you're absolutely right. And if I implied anything else, then I take it back. I mean, I was just saying, it's just if all you can start with is $5, then all, by all means, start with $5 for sure. Absolutely.
Yep. 100%.
100%. Okay. Now I think we're running. The time goes so fast when we do this. We've got just a little time left. We have a couple of viewer questions I wanted to get to. If you guys have a couple more minutes.
Let's do it.
Stacy, Miranda, and Aaron, I found your show a few months ago and always look forward to the next podcast episode. By the way, as an aside here, this is a good way to get your question read, is to tell us how much you like us.
That's okay. Right.
I'm 50 years old and plan to work 15 more years. I have a 403B with three accounts with fees of 0.29, 0.75, and 0.65%. My question is, what should I do about the 403B knowing when running the numbers, 20 to 25% of my final investment would be lost to fees? I have an additional $500 to $1,000 to invest. I appreciate your ideas on how to invest the additional money and hope to hear this question on an upcoming show.
Yeah. So I, if you're eligible, I'm a huge fan of the Roth IRA. You can find a lot of resources that charge, you know, 0.25% for a Roth IRA, or even less. So I'm a big fan of the Roth IRA. The maximum contribution for 2021 is $6,000, but because you are 50 years and older, you get that catch-up contribution of $1,000, bringing your eligible total to $7,000. Now, I don't know whether that's $500 per month or $1,000 per month.
Yeah, we don't know.
I think that's what they mean.
I think that's what they mean, too.
And, but yeah, so, I mean, so if you can contribute up to $7,000 to a Roth IRA, that is, tax, you know, when you withdraw it, that's going to be after tax money. So you pay taxes today, but later on you're going to withdraw it. And you also don't have to worry about RMDs on your Roth IRA, which is nice. Now there is an income requirement there. So your income phase out range for taxpayers when you're contributing to a Roth IRA for 2021, these things change every year, is if you are, single or head of household, you have to be making $140,000 or less to contribute at all. And if you are married filing jointly, you have to be making $208,000 or less. And then there are phase outs. So your ability to, you know, invest the full amount phases out, but you do need to meet those income requirements. So $139,000 a year if you're single or a head of household. And for if you're filing jointly, that phase out range is, ends at $208,000. So you have to be making less than $208,000.
And you know, by the way, if you don't mind, let me clarify something too, because people who are listening might not know what this was about. When they say they have a 403B, which is basically like a 401k in mm-hmm. the nonprofit sector, they have a 403B. They have fees. They have three accounts, so three different funds within that 403B, and they're paying fees of 0.29, so about a third of a percent, three quarters of a percent, and a little over half a percent per year for management. And then they say, well, when I run the numbers, that could mean 20 to 25% of my final investment be lost to fees. Now, that may be confusing to people. But if you take, if you have a 401k or you have a 403b or anything from an employer, you've got mutual funds in that account. And in those mutual funds, you're paying management fees, which are not always easy to find. And as the as it compounds over time, those fees can be a lot. I did a story once standing in the showroom of a Ferrari dealership saying that the average person, the average 401k person, will pay enough in fees over their working life over 40 years to buy a Ferrari. So even though these fees may look small, and these actually are not really huge fees, they can really add up. And obviously also depends on how much you're earning, you know, because that's these fees come out of your earnings. So if you're earning 0.29% and you're paying 2.29%, you're making nothing. But if you're earning 20% and paying 2.9 or 0.29, not as bad. Point being, though, if you're in a 401k or a 403b plan, check your fees. And if your fees seem high, you could go to HR and you could say, geez, how come these fees are so high in our 403b plan or our 401k plan? And you could, you know, try to get some other people involved and see if you can get lower fees for your for the funds within that plan. So what's my question? I got Keith. You want to read it to me?
I would love to read it to you. So Keith says, I was listening to the podcast Money Moves to Make in Every Decade of Your Life, and I have a question. When you have to start withdrawing your traditional IRA, is it okay to pay the taxes with IRA money? All right. Fun question.
Sure it is, Keith. You can do that if you want. As a matter of fact, when you start making RMDs, which, by the way, you use that word too. Some people might not know what it means. RMD is required minimum distribution. Once you reach the age of 72, you have to start taking money out of your retirement plans. And if you don't, there's huge penalties. I mean, monster penalties. So you really have to start doing that. Now, let's say that you've got your 401k, or what does he have? Traditional IRA. You've got that with a custodian. So in other words, like Vanguard, let's say. Vanguard will notify you that you need to start taking that money out. And they will also ask you if you would like for them to withhold taxes. And in fact, they're required, unless you tell them otherwise, they're required to withhold 10% for taxes and maybe state withholding too. So you do have to let them know that if you don't want it. And you know, there's obviously a disadvantage of using your RMD, you're taking money out of your retirement plan and using it to pay taxes because it's no longer in your retirement plan and therefore it can't compound. But, you know, if you don't have the money to pay the taxes, no problem whatsoever with having your custodian withhold the taxes and pay them for you. And again, just make sure you take out enough, but your custodian will help you do that too.
Yeah.
You got anything to add to that, Miranda?
Nope. I think that's a good point and a good thing to keep in mind.
Aaron, you satisfied with those questions and answers?
Totally. Although I have nothing to do with any of that.
You weren't listening to any of that.
I don't have 403Bs or Roth IRA, whatever.
I hope you do have an IRA.
Nope. Don't have one of those either.
Uh-oh. There's a topic for our next podcast.
Oh my gosh.
We'll call that one Shaming Aaron.
All right, let's shame the
Bring it on.
Crap out of Aaron.
Yeah, I've tried it lots of times, even on this podcast about his hair. It doesn't really do it. It has no effect.
I wanted to throw some things out there that are pretty interesting. So an estimated 1.1 million older workers exited the American labor force between August 2020 and January 2021.
That is interesting.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. Seems like they got out either because of COVID fears or they just changed their ideas of how to live. And on the flip side of that, 2.5 million new business applications were filed in 2021 as of May.
I remember reading that too. I was surprised. I think they were saying that more businesses were started in 2021 than any time in recent history, which was a surprise.
It's a good sign. I mean, it's either two things can happen. Either it's awesome that new businesses are rolling out in this great slow recovery, or we could have a lot of flop businesses start up and not make it anywhere. So,
or people didn't have any jobs to go to, so they were starting their own businesses too.
Exactly. And remember, I mentioned earlier that $2.4 trillion were saved by U.S. consumers. Mm-hmm. And remember that the GDP, the consumer spending, accounts for 68% of the GDP.
Yep.
So That's a sign of possibly good things to come.
So if you don't go out and spend a bunch of money frivolously, then you're not being a good citizen. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly.
Let us hope that my wife, Sarah, is not listening to this podcast. Okay, we're out of time, right? I think we are.
Yeah,
we're out of time.
Okay, guys. I'm afraid we are out of time, folks, but we're never out of topic. Dig a little deeper. I told you, you're going to find links to lots more info in our show notes. Lots more info. So go there and check it out. And remember, if your goal is to make more, to spend less, or retire rich, your online home is moneytalksnews.com. That's where you also find show notes, moneytalksnews.com. And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That is Miranda Marquette, MarquiT.com. If you've got a question, comment, or topic you'd like to suggest, don't just sit there. Tell us. You can email us at hello@moneytalksnews.com. That's hello@moneytalksnews.com. And one last thing, if you appreciate what we do, then do something for us. Subscribe to this podcast and tell your friends too. It only takes you a couple seconds, really helps us. So if you like us, show us and subscribe and spread the word. I'm Stacy Johnson.
And I'm Miranda Marquette.
And I'm Aaron Freeman.
Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. We're going to see you right here next time.